Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio. Odyssey app.
It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And coming up at 5:30, Noah Eagle, my good friend who spent the summer calling the Olympics, the basketball with Dwayne Wade and LaChina Robinson. What was it like to call all those games every day? What was it like to work with Dwayne on his first ever time calling games in front of an audience as big as the Olympics? And oh, by the way, it's not like he's been resting since he's been back. He called the Chargers preseason games for their local broadcast, and then he is on a plane to Sao Paulo where he will call Eagles and Packers for Peacock and NBC on Friday. So Noah Eagle, nice enough throughout his busy schedule to join us coming up at 5:30. Right now, though, for Not My Beat today, we're going to let you listen to a portion of Take Command that Logan and I did actually before, obviously, the first segment on the show today, but with the same idea in mind. What does the best case scenario for the Commanders look like this year? And what does the worst case scenario for the Commanders look like this year?
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
We've made it through the offseason. We've had all these storylines. We've seen guys develop, young players. We've seen some position battles play out. We've seen some big trades with Jahan Dotson going to Philly. Like, how are you feeling generally? Now, let's get on the football therapy couch. How are we feeling going into the 2024 season for the Commanders?
I mean, I'm excited. And if I said I wasn't, I'd be lying. I think, you know, the analyst in me, or the logical person in me, is like, you know, don't be too excited. Everything's going to be fine. Like, take it one step at a time. And there's some truth to that. But also, like, I'm a fan. I'm excited to watch football. I'm excited to see this team play. I'm excited to see Jaden Daniels on the field. I'm excited to see Joe Witt Jr. execute his defense. Like, all those things I'm really looking forward to seeing. I think the offseason's gone about as well as it could have gone. You know, I think when you look at the hiring of Dan Quinn, Adam Peters, and everything that this organization has done, everything they're doing around the practice facility, everything they're doing at the stadium to kind of make it a better experience for the fans, to make it a better experience for the players. I mean, it's all trending in the right way with a ownership group that wants to create a winner. And this is the first step, the first year of that. So that's, again, that's all exciting stuff. I think it's also good to kind of put a little bit of a modifier on it, at least mentally, right? Like, this team, while I love all the process, still needs an enrichment of talent to a certain extent. And that's not to besmirch or be critical of the guys that are here. It's just like when you look around at like the San Francisco 49ers, the Detroit Lions, like the Philadelphia Eagles, like they have a certain roster construction that allows them to be competitive. And as much as you want to talk, or I want to talk about coaching and X's and O's, like, you need good football players, and getting more depth here is going to be extremely important. And that can't happen now. So I guess going into the season, like, that's my understanding. That's my expectation, is like, I'm excited to see all these things play out, knowing full well that next offseason is critical, and probably the offseason after that is critical as well.
No, I think that's totally fair. I am cautiously optimistic, but I am very, very cautious, because I do see a path for them to win 9-10 games if Jaden Daniels is awesome and some other things play out. But I realistically think they're probably more in the, let's call it 6-8, probably 7 or 8 wins. If I had to, like, 7.5 is probably the number that I would give. I think 6.5 is what it's been in Vegas. So I'd probably go over on that, but, like, you know, if it's 7.5, I'm like really, really squeezed on it. But that's the NFL, right? Like, the league is designed to be an 8-8, or now a 9-8, 8-9 type of league. And, a couple teams are able to way overshoot that. A couple teams get burned by injuries and it's way under. And, you know, the Commanders are in an interesting place because they're actually not kind of built in the way that the league is designed, because they're at the start of an intentional rebuild. But with that being said, that talent dearth is, I think, especially at the top. Like, I actually really love their depth. And I think that really came up a lot when we were talking about
putting together the 53. Mm. Like, it was hard because some of those back end guys are good football players. And like, we, for one, for all the talk every single year of like, oh, you can't let that guy go, he's going to get signed to someone else's 53, and then it never happens. They had two guys that got signed to a 53 elsewhere, and a third guy that they traded. So that's three guys that other teams were like, yeah, we want that Washington Commander on our 53 that you don't have room for. That's great. But I was listening to a preview the other day, and it's like, how many blue chip players are on this roster? You could argue it's zero. Now, I think John, Duran, Terry all have chances to shoot back up. I think Luvu's got a chance to shoot back up or to shoot up into that blue chip type of category, depending on how some things go. Obviously, Jaden, you'd hope eventually is a blue chip guy, but he's a rookie, and the chances he's going to play like a blue chipper this year just aren't very high based off the history of rookie quarterbacks in the NFL. But, you know, that's it. It's optimistic because I think we like a lot of what we've seen. Cautious because we're just realistic about where the guys on this roster have been recently, whether that is not performing to, you know, all pro type levels or in college for some of their guys that are going to be the best players on this team very soon. Not only Jaden, but a Mike Sainer still, etc. So that does beg a question, Logan. If they're going to hit their ceiling, if they're going to have the bottom fall out, what does each one look like? So let's start off with actually, this is not as much fun, but let's end on a high note. So if it falls apart this year, if they're closer to that like 4-6 win range, because it's like, oh, it's year one of a rebuild, and man, we were far, not as far along as we thought. Call it a Washington Wizards, because that's what happened to them last year. Then what does that look like?
Yeah, so I think if just right now, and obviously like this is going to change as the season goes on, but I think what I would be skeptical of is like, you know, one of the issues is how does the protection hold up over the course of the season? If the offensive line struggles, if Cliff doesn't have an innovative plan, if there's not a nuanced protection plan each week to maximize that offensive line in conjunction with a game plan, and that group ends up struggling a little bit, I'm not sure there's the horsepower on the outside that you can compensate for. Like, you know, for example, Cincinnati in 2022, you know, when they draft Jamar Chase, like their offensive line's kind of mediocre, but Jamar Chase is able to win so quickly. They're able to push the football down the field. They're able to find explosive plays. I'm not sure there's that same type of horsepower here outside. So if the protection doesn't go and the offensive line kind of underperforms, I definitely think that's something that could kind of torpedo this season and put them in a bad spot. It could stunt Jaden Daniels' development and just put the team generally in a bad spot. And then kind of piggybacking off of that, if the offensive line's fine, and Jaden has a little bit of a struggle early on, which is totally understandable. He's a rookie player. Like, those things happen. Then that's going to kind of set that back. And obviously they're not going to win games they should win if the quarterback's struggling, which is, again, it's entirely plausible that does happen. And it's entirely reasonable. Like, he's a young player. How many times have we seen young players struggle, but kind of over the course of the season develop and become something that is the franchise, looks like the franchise guy? So I think both those things are things offensively that could torpedo them. And then defensively, I think the one thing that I've circled is, can they consistently game plan and scheme up a pass rush?
Yes.
I think we know what the coverage situation is. It's less than ideal, but we're always kind of banking on, you know, Dan Quinn, Joe Witt Jr., and what they did in Dallas and their ability to maximize rush opportunities for guys. That's hard to do week in and week out. It's just challenging. Much like the protection thing and insulating an offensive line, that's just hard. It's hard as a coordinator. There are certain times the matchups aren't favorable. It's the same thing with the defensive line, the blitz packages, and that front, just let's just say the front in general, creating pressure. And so I know I have a lot of faith in Joe Witt Jr., but I also understand and empathize with how challenging that can and is going to be. So those are the two things that I would kind of circle and be like, offensive line, quarterback offensively, and then just the front. And can we generate enough pressure to insulate the back end? Because that's always been one of my assumptions, is that group will play better because the pressure will be better. But that's not necessarily true, because that's a big lift for Joe Witt Jr.
Yeah, realistically, there's a lot of what ifs on the defense. And if some of those go poorly, it could get sideways this season. And I don't think it'll look like it did last year, right? Like, I don't think it's going to be a bunch of coverage busts and there's never any pressure. And like, I don't think it's going to be that bad. But you are relying on Quan Martin to kind of make a position switch. He was playing nickel. He's got to be able to convert. You're kind of relying on Frankie Luvu to make a position switch, where he goes from pure off-ball linebacker who's an excellent blitzer to, hey, we're going to rely on you in passing situations to be an edge. And that is a different deal. And I think he's up to it, but you're hoping that that switch goes well. Obviously, Jamin, to a lesser extent, being relied upon, but you're asking him to make the same switch. And if he, you know, as we'll talk about in the ceiling, if some of these things go right, then holy crap, like this could be awesome.
If you want to go, like, you know, Jeremy Chinn, career resurgence, Quan Martin, position change, right. Manuel Forbes figuring out, Benjamin St. Juice turning into defense, Mike Sanders starting
nickel.
The entire
secondary is a bunch of what-ifs.
And then defensive line is very similar. Can Duron and John bounce back? You know, is Dorrance Armstrong ready for a full-time role? Like Cleveland Farrell, can he be that? That's what you're looking at here. And so obviously that could go well or it could not go well. It could go well for some of them and not well. You know what I'm saying? Like there's a...
And that's the most realistic, you know, expectation, right? Like if we don't go to the extremes of, hey, how does it completely fall apart? How does it go as well as it possibly could? The realistic thing is that some of these are going to work. Let's say Forbes is great. St. Juice doesn't quite catch on, or the other way around.
Yeah.
Or like the position switch works for Quan, but Chinn sustains another injury because that's been his life since he became in second to Chase Young in Rookie of the Year in 2020. Like that is probably the most realistic thing, that like maybe Luvu it works out and Dorrance Armstrong we discover is best as an actual third guy, not as a primary number one starting edge. Like that is,
I mean, we hope it's the other way, but again, like these are entirely plausible scenarios.
Right. But I'm saying that like some of them work, some of them don't is probably the thing. And I think, you know, taking a bigger picture look at this, like my kind of motif for the season, is like, it's a season of discovery. It's a season to figure out, like part of the reason that they don't go sign Gilmore or make some of the other moves that fans wanted them to, that probably would have helped their team in the very short term, is because you need to find out if Emmanuel Forbes is good. You need to find out if Benjamin St. Juice can play for you. You need to figure this stuff out. And if the reps aren't available, then you can't figure it out. And so ultimately, like this, the whole thing for this season is, let's figure out exactly who these guys are, and then next off season, like you said, it's such a huge off season to supplement, especially on the defensive side of the football, and invest in the places that you need to, because now you understand what you do and don't have on your roster.
Yeah, and I think that same thing applies to the offense. And I know people are, you know, Jaden Daniels, like, as confident as we are in him after what we've seen in preseason, it's still a question. He's still a rookie player. Offensive line, right? Does Wiley flourish in this offense? I think Cosme will be fine, but new center, new left guard, probably a rookie left tackle at some point this year. Terry, you know, we know Terry, how consistent he's been, but Zach Ertz's health, like, you know, over the course of the season, he hasn't been healthy for two seasons, like, and as well as he's done, like, and as much as they're relying on him, you know, that's going to be a huge deal. And then how do they kind of allocate the second, third, fourth receiver to maximize this offense? I think the way you characterize it with this is a year of discovery is huge, because you got to kind of figure out what your foundation is. And some of these questions are going to be answered in the negative, which is terrible, which is tough, but some of them are going to be awesome. And you're going to be like, wow, you know, like look at B-Rob, look how well he did in this offense. Like look at, we can build around this piece, and we do need to find a second wide receiver, or we do need to find a younger pass catching tight, whatever it looks like. But I think like that's the best way to think about it. A year of discovery. And again, if Jaden Daniels plays well, you could easily win 8-9 games. But if all of these factors around him, if he struggles, like it could be kind of a middling year, which is also totally understandable given the current situation with the roster. And I'm glad you pointed out, like, you know, in terms of blue chip guys, like there's not a lot of them on this team, right? So usually you need a couple of those to make sure you're making a push against some of the better teams in the NFL. So lots of questions, and I think they're all very reasonable.
For sure. And if we want to now flip to kind of the positive, you know, how do we see them hit their ceiling? It's a lot of those get answered in the affirmative. And I think, like, to even put a finer point on it, like this is the year we discover whether it's a 1, 2, or 3 year rebuild. Like if all of a sudden De'Ami Brown's good in this offense and you're like, whoa, okay, third round pick, took him a couple years. That sometimes happens, but he's a legit two. Okay, well now it's a party. Like let's go spend some money in free agency next year on one more weapon and some defensive guys, or you know, you figure out which of the answers come to the negative, and you're doing a Houston. You're competing in year two of a rookie quarterback, which is amazing because that's a bunch of years on a rookie quarterback timeline that you have to spend money elsewhere. Obviously, if it goes the other way and you're like, okay, maybe we're gonna need to restock the cupboard over the course of a couple years before we're legitimately competing, then that's a different story. But for the ceiling side of it, Logan, I think obviously number one is Jaden is like actually a deliver, no assembly required quarterback. That there is stuff he can do, and of course he'll have room to grow, but there is enough stuff that he can do right now that they can compete week in, week out. He doesn't turn the football over as much as a lot of rookies do. He's able to use his legs to generate some explosives. Obviously, he's hitting some deep balls, and he and Cliff just have a good synergy. I think another one for ceiling is Cliff makes the evolution late in season that he needs to, that has kind of plagued him in his career. That there's not a wall at the end of the season. And then I think the pass rush is huge, because I think if the pass rush is there defensively, they find ways to generate pressure, then the coverage will hold up enough. And I think guys like Sandersill and Forbes can kind of go to their instincts and create some turnovers. If not, then we talked about what that looks like. But to me, those are like the biggest factors are Cliff's ability to scheme it up and how that works with Jaden's skill set and Jaden's ability to execute, and then the pass rush defensively. If those three things are on, then let's have a season.
No, I'm totally with you. I mean, I think, again, Jaden Daniels is like the easiest one to point out, but, you know, Brandon Coleman at left tackle, like, is another one that I would kind of circle too. Like, if he develops in a similar way, that'd be awesome. And then defensively, like we talked about, like the pass rush and does the scheming and some of the pressure packages they put in camp that no one's seen yet, do those hit the way they think they're going to hit, and do they cause enough disruption? And, you know, like, again, like it's kind of the same thing we just said in reverse, but I do think there's a world where that does happen, and this defense plays significantly better, and the offense is significantly better, and everything kind of progresses well. And with hiccups along the way, no doubt, it's not going to be, you know, 17 games, just win them all kind of straight out. But I think, like, understanding that there's going to be positives and negatives, but if it's generally trending in the right direction, I think you feel really, really good about this and really good about the direction of the organization.
No doubt about it. And I think that, you know, again, Coleman's a perfect example of what I was talking about with the 1, 2, or 3 year rebuild. Like, if he's not up to starting caliber at left tackle, you need to use a high resource on left tackle probably next year. If he is a starter at left tackle, well, that means you can use a high resource on something else. We're talking like your first round pick on something else next year. And like, that's a huge luxury to be like, okay, we got our starting quarterback and starting left tackle in one draft. And so those are the kinds of things that in the long term, I think are huge for this team in terms of the rebuild. And, you know, that's why Adam Peters is getting paid all that money, is to get that stuff right. And he's obviously revamped the scouting process, so you'd hope that it's even better in year two, even though I think a lot of us look at it as being fairly successful in year one. Anything else before we get to the interview with Bill, Logan, tack on here?
No, I'm just really excited. I'm really excited to see, like, this is why the season's going to be fun to watch. It's for these positive and negative, you know, kind of growing, or, you know, or maybe that's the wrong way to put it, to see what this team is, I think, is what I'm most excited for. And that all starts versus Tampa Bay. So I really can't wait to kind of see all of this offseason conversation, all the draft, all the free agents and acquisitions, like, on the field playing football against a team that's pretty solid in Tampa Bay.
All right, that from Take Command. If you want more, you can, of course, check out the Take Command podcast. You do that wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app. Wait, Anthony, is there any other places that you know that are big podcast places? Like Amazon Music? They do a lot of stuff for podcasts?
Podcast places?
Yeah, we got most of them there.
Yeah, I think you touched on all of them.
Yeah, really? I mean, look. If I didn't say your podcast place, the place that you listen to podcasts, you already know about it. And if you don't listen to podcasts, but you're looking for a place, I just told you all the main places. So go to a podcast place and type in Take Command, and you can get more good stuff from me and Logan. You can also listen to this show on demand. Just search The Hoffman Show. Do that for The Chris Russell Show and The Kevin Sheehan Show. If you search The Kevin Sheehan Show, there's also another Kevin Sheehan Show. They're both Kevin Sheehan, but they're different shows. It gets confusing for people, but that's okay. Here's what I can tell you. Coming up next on this radio show, Noah Eagle had spent the summer in France calling the Olympic basketball, and he did a phenomenal job. He got to work with Dwayne Wade. He got to work with LaChyna Robinson and the great team at NBC, calling both the men's and the women's. He had iconic calls in both the men's and the women's tournaments. So what was it like? What was it like getting to work with Dwayne? What was it like in those moments where you're like, man, history is on the line in multiple games? Probably didn't expect that on the women's side, considering the U.S. was kind of expecting to blow everyone out. On the men's side, maybe like, is this team going to be able to do it? What was it like to live that life and go through it? Plus, talk a little football because Noah is on the call of Eagles and Packers on Friday night on Peacock. So we'll dive into all of that next. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980 and always live as well on the free Odyssey app.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And earlier this week, actually it was this weekend, in full transparency, I had the chance to talk to my pal Noah Eagle. He is in Brazil right now because he's getting ready to call the Packers and Eagles game down in Sao Paulo. But he spent his summer in France covering the Olympics, calling basketball for NBC, incredible assignment for him. And we had like a 35-minute on-air conversation. We probably talked for an hour in total, but we had 35-minute on-air conversation, which we've chopped down to the absolute best of right now for you. If you want the full one, it's going in our podcast feed. And if you want the and Anthony, I'll play it over here. If you want the full video, it'll be on YouTube at Craig Hoffman and at the Team 980. But Noah talking about what it was like to work with Dwayne Wade and spend his summer being the voice of basketball on the Olympics and then transitioning right back into football. It's my absolute pleasure to bring in a great friend, Noah Eagle, who has been on your television doing everything all summer. The next time he'll be on your television is Friday night in Brazil on Peacock, where he will call Packers-Eagles, one of three games that your family of networks has this weekend. Noah Eagle, how are you, man? You must be tired.
Definitely a little tired, but pushing through. You know, nobody... what's the great quote from Michael Keaton and the other guys? I don't want no scrubs. Yeah, or that was TLC. You know,
that was TLC.
Waterfalls. You know, also TLC. He didn't recognize that, but yeah, we just push through, man. You know how this is. You know how we're wired and excited to get another awesome assignment. That's really what the big thing is here. So three NFL games, including then the college football Saturday on top of that. I mean, it is going to be a special week of football, not just on NBC, but all around the country.
No doubt about it. You guys have the Thursday night opener as well, and of course Sunday night football as scheduled. We'll get back to the football in a second, but I'm just so curious because, you know, we were over there in France. We tried to get together in Paris. Our schedules didn't align because you were quite busy calling men's and women's basketball.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, like, what it was like for you. We haven't actually caught up, so this is a real conversation between friends that's happening into microphones that people get to hear. But like, the experience of calling it, especially the men's with Dwayne, someone that I'm sure we're close enough in age that we both grew up watching, including in the Olympics and being arguably the best player on that 08 team in terms of performance. What was it like to go through that process with him? And especially, I think the thing that I'm interested in knowing is he was so outwardly grateful to you for being his partner in that experience. Like on Instagram, he's like, thank God I had Noah to teach me the ropes. So like, what is that like to go through it and then to take a step back after and be like, wow, look at what we just did?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. It's completely different when you're in the moment and then after the fact when you can actually embrace and analyze everything that went down. But to start on the Dwayne side of it, I'm not sure you could find a classier person in how he handled himself start to finish. Let's not forget he never called a game before. You know, the only game, quote unquote, that he called was like a skills competition and a Rising Stars challenge in the All-Star weekend format. So he had never called a real game until our first game, which was France-Brazil, and Victor Wembanyama running out on the court, chucking up a shot from half court in front of 30,000 fans who are patiently waiting or impatiently waiting for him to get on the floor an hour before tip-off and drilling a half-court shot. That was his first experience sitting in the chair before a game, and he goes, is this what it's like? I'm like, not always, all right? Not always. This is not – don't get used to this. This is not normal. And I think he embraced that part of it. And obviously, you mentioned it, the experience he had as a player was massive. And he drew on that certainly as an Olympic player, as someone who played with USA Basketball and outside competitions as well. But his wealth of knowledge for the game was on full display. His willingness to have fun was on full display. And more than anything, what I hope people took away from him doing it was how much effort he put into it. And he really did. Before we ever got there, he was literally working with a vocal coach to learn how to pronounce European names properly. You know, that's just going above and beyond. And his whole mentality was, well, I had coaches when I was a player, you know, when I wanted to improve my jump shot, or I wanted to have a better handle, or if I wanted to become stronger, I had somebody as a trainer or an athletic performance coach or a skills coach. I said, why wouldn't I do the same thing as a broadcaster and rely on all the people around me and try to learn? And so he was, as a result, incredibly coachable. He listened to whatever we had to tell him and anything that we heard. But more than anything, he remained himself, which is the most important. You know this. I mean, if anybody who's in this knows that if you want to be successful, you have to be you. You can't try to be anybody else. And I thought he did that. But yeah, I think once it was over and I really took the step back and appreciated the 3 weeks that we were there and appreciated the 2 week run of games where it was, what, 22 games over the course of 14 days, 17 different teams. That's not quite a normal assignment. So to really step back and say, okay, we did that and we did it well. And we got really lucky with some incredible games, some games that maybe I will never match over the course of my hopefully long broadcasting career. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. One more like Dwayne specific question that I do want to know, like a little bit more about the prep that goes into calling the Olympics, especially when you're doing the men's and the women's as you were. You have all these players, like many players that you cover as you're doing Nets games in the NBA, and you did Clippers games for a number of years, but a lot that you didn't. So we can talk about that in a second. But that coachability from Dwayne, there's because it can go, like I've done this long enough as well, like it can go one of two ways with athletes. Athletes either think they know how to do it and they don't want any feedback, or they're like, I've been coached my career, coach me up. Correct. And then I know that you guys also were able to have like all these moments you guys were posting from going to dinner together and all those kinds of things. Like how did building that human connection with him and those moments help the broadcast ultimately in what we saw unfold over 2 weeks of you guys calling games together?
No, it's massive because, I mean, that's what the question that I think people ask me the most is, well, how do you develop chemistry with somebody quickly? And it's really not a difficult formula. The formula is you develop a friendship with that person, a genuine friendship with that person. And even if you're not best friends, it's a taking a genuine interest in the person that you're working with and listening and responding and being willing to talk about things, whatever it might be, that are completely unrelated to the games that you're covering. That's important. In fact, that's imperative, in my opinion, to have success as a teammate. And so Dwayne was perfect for that. I mean, the best example of that was week one. We were in Lille, which was 2.5 hour drive from Paris, maybe even three and a half. If you got stuck in the traffic, we did go in there. And we were staying in, I would say, you know, a very okay hotel. It wasn't the nicest accommodation you'll ever see. And Dwayne Wade, who was in the Hall of Fame and has made a whole lot of money, could have easily said, I'm going to go find better accommodations for myself. I'm going to stay in my own area. But he chose to stay with us the entire time. He stayed across the hall from me. I would say he said it was probably the lowest quality hotel room he had stayed in since his college days, maybe, or maybe even since his high school days. But he did it because he wanted to be a part of the team. And we had explained to him beforehand, hey, this is like a locker room. You know, this is like your locker room. This is the closest thing you're going to feel to your locker room. And we're going to roast each other and we're going to hang out with each other and we're going to poke fun at things that are happening and we're going to create real memories. And then that's going to ooze itself on screen. And that's really what happened. You know, everything that we were doing was real. And then it just kind of was a continuation. You know, my stats guy, Tyler Freed, said, don't say anything that you don't want getting on the air, off the air, because anything's fair game at this point. And for us, it really was. We would be talking about something on the ride over. The first day, I remember we were doing that Brazil game. It was Brazil and France. And Cristiano Felicio is on the Brazilian team. And I'm like, Dwayne, you played with him in Chicago. And he's like, yeah, he stole a triple-double from me. First thing you said. I'm like, what? And he goes into this whole thing of how he stole this triple-double and he yelled at him. And he's like, come on, man, you got to be smarter than that. And he's like, I didn't have many of those left. I was at the end of my career at that point. We talked about it for 5 minutes. So the first thing, he checks in, and out of nowhere, I just hear Dwayne go, it was a cold night in Chicago. And I'm like, okay, I know where this is going now. And it was a whole back and forth. And it was great. So that stuff is really important, because if you don't have it, you can still do good broadcasts. It just takes it to a different level.
Noah Eagle, NBC Sports with us here on the Hoffman Show. He's got the call Friday, Packers and Eagles. Talk about that in just a few minutes, but recapping a little bit of his summer spent over in France, calling the basketball. And then, by the way, people are like, oh, he's probably rested until football. No, he's been calling a Chargers preseason, jumped right back into it. So been all over the place. Lots of airline miles, lots of time zones. He barely knows where he is, but he's doing this interview and he's doing a great job. So for a TV play-by-play guy, there's two huge things you got to do. You got to set up your analysts great, and you got to nail the big moments. And lo and behold, you wind up with a huge moment in both gold medal games, the Curry Dagger three, which sent me absolutely cackling as I was watching in French, because we were still in Paris. That was the last night we were there. And just their version of the call was hilarious. And then you have the moment where Gabby Williams' foot is on the line, and you have to like process that in real time, which, by the way, I haven't told you this. I was watching that game on the plane. The VPN worked on. I watched you and LaChina call that game somewhere over Canada as we had gone like up and back down towards, we were flying into Charlotte and then had to connect. So got to a point where the satellite internet was working well enough to stream the old Peacock app. Love that.
Yo, that's crazy. I don't know how Peacock tracked that in terms of viewership, but whatever it is,
plus one.
Appreciate you, Peacock.
Yeah, you're so welcome. So how do you, like, with the high, I'm sure you've gone back and watched the calls. Like, is that almost like an out-of-body experience, moments like that, that you know, and especially like the Curry one, you know you're calling something that's going to last forever. That's a moment that's going to be in every highlight reel for USA basketball for the next 100 years. Like, does that hit you in the moment later? Like, what's that like?
Definitely not in the moment.
Hit you right now?
Yeah, definitely not in the moment. Especially because I knew I had two women's games the next day, and not just the next day, but starting at 11 a.m. And so that game, after all the ceremony and everything, I didn't get back to my hotel room until 12:30. And now I'm like, I got to prepare for two straight games tomorrow. And, you know, I think I knew it was big because my phone was definitely blowing up from it. And so that signaled how many people were watching, but I didn't really look at it in historical context. Now, I will say this, in terms of the calls themselves and in terms of the moment itself, I had done enough Steph Curry games as an opponent, certainly different when you're an opponent. And this was the first time I really got to experience it and the jubilation that comes with one of those Steph heat checks. But I had done enough of these to know there's one more coming. You know, there's one more coming. There's another one. So you do know that you have to still have another level. Mm. And so I took the chance in keeping something late. Now, people have asked, did you come up with the golden dagger ahead of time? I did not. I came up with that in the start of that possession, basically. Anything that I said, none of that was pre-planned. It's impossible, in my opinion, to truly pre-plan any of that stuff. You got to let the game come to you, let the game dictate how you're going to say it. And Steph obviously provided the moments. And now our job is really just don't mess it up, man. Don't mess up this moment. Don't jump on this somehow. Get out of the way when you need to get out of the way. But just if you can add something, great. If not, then just don't try to do too much. And I felt like that's what we did, is we really just reacted very genuinely, very naturally. And so we got fortunate that people seemed to respond. It is funny how quickly things can change, because in the Serbia game, when the U.S. is down 17 in the third quarter, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, wow, you know, Dwayne and I have really, everyone seemed to really like what we've said. LaChina and I, people have really enjoyed kind of our broadcast so far. We've been really lucky to have a very positive reaction. But if the U.S. loses and I'm on the call for this and Dwayne's on the call for this, we go from being, you know, somewhat of darlings to absolutely universally hated. And every time we pop up on screen, it's like, ah, those guys, they're on the failure. Like, I'm like, that's what I'm thinking, right? And then the polar opposite, where obviously they win that game and everyone's like, this was awesome. And then they win the gold medal game and everyone's like, this is awesome. And then the women, same feeling now is happening, because when France is battling with them, I'm like, this is getting tight. And I'm looking at LaChina and she's like, this is getting tight. And we're like, is this going to go the right way? Is like, because look, obviously, they were the more talented team in terms of just overall depth, but it's not like France wasn't talented. I mean, obviously, their top players are their top players, and we know what they're capable of. And Gabby Williams came alive in the second half in particular. But at the same time, the U.S. was also going for 8 straight golds. And I don't think we were giving, not necessarily us, but we as a country were giving enough credit to how difficult that actually is because of how dominant they have been for so long. So in that moment, we're kind of having that same thought of, what are we going to say if they lose here? Like, how are we going to frame that? And then obviously Kalia Copper just comes up huge, massive buckets in the second half and down the stretch in the fourth quarter. Big plays from her, big plays from Asia. She hits the free throws Copper does in the last couple seconds, whatever, 5 seconds left. And I just remember Johannes gets it up ahead for Williams. And I was pretty certain that the foot was on the line. But that's to your point. It's a decision you have to make in the moment. Do you wait on it or do you just say it? And I was at a certain percentage of confidence. Let's say I was 90% confident. I said, okay, I got to take the risk. It's a risk that's going to be worth the reward if I'm correct. And I felt good. But LaChina, right after I think we finished the broadcast, she goes, thank God you were right. I was like, I know. She goes, I couldn't see it. I couldn't see if it was on the line or not. And our producer, the on-site producer, David Gibson's like, I didn't see it either. Thank God you were right. I'm like, I got lucky. You know what I mean? I just took the risk. And fortunately, I was correct. But man, both of those finishes were insane. And when I talked to my dad afterward, he said, I really hope you enjoyed those. I was like, they were incredible. They were some of the best games I've ever called. He goes, you're right. And you could call games for 40 more years and they might be the best games you ever call. So I hope you enjoyed them. I was like, yeah, I did.
So by the way, speaking of your dad, I did want to ask one question where your dad is going to be a part of it. But I will also tell you, you know what else I watched on the plane was, because I'm me and I have the job that I have, I had to watch the Commanders preseason game to be ready for my show the next day, which on NFL Game Pass was the Jets broadcast. And thus I switched from you to your dad.
Let's go.
And went from gold medal thrill to Jets Commanders preseason week one. Let's go. Let's go. Last thing for Noah Eagle here. The actual reason, in theory, that we're having him on, the real reason is I wanted to have this conversation with Noah because I've been wanting to ask him all this stuff and I thought it'd be really interesting for the audience. And so we got all the background of the summer and everything out of the way. Next up, Packers Eagles Friday night on Peacock, 7 p.m. The coverage begins. Week one is beautiful, Noah, because we have no idea what is going to happen. Week one is terrible for broadcasters, Noah, because we have no idea what is going to happen. So as you prepare for this one, like, what is your top storyline going into it? If you want to give one each team, or if you just like, if there's one more overarching one that crosses, sideline to sideline, what is the big thing that you think is the storyline to watch that you'll be tracking and kind of keeping the audience updated on throughout this one beyond whatever plays out on the field?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the overarching storyline for our game is that it's an elite matchup between two teams that believe they can win a Super Bowl this year. And so how do you start a season with expectations of, hey, we need to go out there and compete for the ultimate prize. And both teams certainly have the personnel, the coaching, and et cetera to do that. And I think that Nick Sirianni is trying to prove, no, I do belong in that elite coaching conversation, despite what happened in the second half of last year. And the Eagles are looking to put that behind them. The main storyline on top of that is the fact that there's an NFL game in Brazil. It's the first time that's ever happening. And so we're going to really highlight that and showcase what it looks like over there. NFL has told us that those tickets sold out very quickly. And so the intrigue in the game is massive. The fandom in Brazil, I didn't realize how much it was growing. They say they have about 36 million fans in that country right now, which is incredible down in South America. But yeah, to just go kind of scope on each team, Eagles have reloaded. You know, you lose some all-time players and certainly Jason Kelce at the forefront of that, but you retool in an offensive line that's still arguably the best in the NFL. A defense that now has young studs on top of the veterans that they bring back on all three levels. Saquon Barkley coming over in division, like, that doesn't happen very often. Now you have Jahan Dotson, as you guys well know, coming over in division. Again, that doesn't happen all that often. So offensively, they've got as many weapons as anybody. These are two of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league. And Jalen Hurts, this is a big time prove it year in many respects. This is a guy that was fighting for the MVP 2 years ago, was nearly a Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl MVP. And instead, within 2 years, he's gone from highest paid player and near MVP to, is he really the guy we thought he is and was? I think that it's still very much in there with him. And this is the start of him trying to provide that for the rest of the league. On the other side, Green Bay was one of the great storylines of the NFL last year, and Jordan Love and his ascension was one of the great storylines of the NFL last year. But there's a difference between being the hunters and the hunted, and they're going to shift to being the hunted now. How do you handle that? And that's what I'm looking for out of them. I think we know LaFleur has been probably one of the more underrated coaches in the league now for years. I think that he's proven himself to be an upper echelon coach. They win every single year. And even 2 years ago when they just barely missed the playoffs, given the injuries that they dealt with, given the inexperience that they had around that roster, the fact that they were in the playoff hunt to start was pretty remarkable. Now you've got Jordan Love ascending to, now he's the highest paid quarterback in NFL history, which happens with each new deal. So I hate saying that because it feels like every time you say one, someone else takes the mantle. You bring in Josh Jacobs. So both these teams have star running backs now. And on top of that, I find the receiving core with Green Bay fascinating because they don't necessarily have a guy, right? Like you don't have your 1A in theory, but you have a bunch of really good guys. And honestly, sometimes that can be even more dangerous. It's a pick your poison. They've got two good tight ends. They've got a line that I think is going to have to prove that they are ready to be a Super Bowl winning type offensive line, but a defense that's littered with talent and a defense that should be really difficult to face. It's a team that has all the pieces, but how do you handle being shifted from hunter to hunted? And I think that's what we're going to get to see right out of the gates here week one, because that Philadelphia side, they've got a lot more to prove than they did a year ago.
No doubt about it. Yeah, the Love trajectory, is it going to be what Jalen went through? And a year from now, are we like, why did they give Jordan Love that deal? Or is he actually this good? I think it's probably that one. But fantasy owners everywhere hating the Green Bay receiving core, football analysts everywhere loving it. There's so much to watch. And it'll all be with Noah on the call Friday night on Peacock. Really appreciate you, dude. Thanks so much for being so generous through your time. And I'll catch you at some point later in the season, or perhaps when you come to town in the spring for the most vaunted assignment on your schedule, Wizards Nets.
You know I'm ready, man. You know I'm always ready for the Wiz. I saw a lot of Bilal Coulibaly, so it'll be time when the time is right. But Craig, appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me.
As they say in France, allez!
Hey, this is DA, and you're...
That's all right, DA. I got it from here. That's Noah Eagle, everybody, with us here on The Hoffman Show. Really appreciate him taking some time before he hopped on the plane to Brazil. Again, there's actually more to that interview. If you want the full thing, check out The Hoffman Show podcast, or we will put up the full thing after the show tonight on YouTube. When we get back, the top Commanders storylines of the day. It's our pick six at six.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.